and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Ecton, and with me, my guest today is Jack Borman. Jack, how you doing?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on. Obviously, you're the former editor-in-chief of the website I'm at right now, canisupas.com, but you're still covering the Wolves out there. What do you got going on?
Yes, sir. We're doing the Locked On Wolves postcast. It's me and my man, Luke Inman, going live after almost every single Timberwolves game, unless there's a Gopher football game or Vikings game that day. And so you can listen to that on the Locked On Wolves audio feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to join us live or see our beautiful faces on YouTube, we're all over the Locked On Minnesota YouTube page.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. I've watched those occasionally when I can, when I'm not covering the team actively myself. I don't know. Gopher football getting top billing over Wolves basketball. Maybe that's just a supply and demand thing. There's not as many Gopher games.
No. But once we get past football season, it'll pretty much be every single game.
There you go. Sounds great. Well, hopefully my audience can head over there and catch you over there, but we'll head into the meat of our podcast here. Just want to get your sense of like what your expectations are for the Wolves moving forward. Obviously the cat trade at the beginning of the season was the big thing that they're still kind of trying to figure out with Randall and DiVincenzo, but they're 8-6. Probably given the soft schedule and the injury free, you'd probably like them to have another win or two, but so it goes. But what are your kind of expectations are the rest of the year? Can they reach the heights that they did last year, or should we kind of have our expectations a bit lower?
Yeah, I personally don't see anything that is not correctable or is not at least correctable to the point where, you know, their talent of their top seven and top eight can't overcome. I think last season the Timberwolves were so elite on one side of the floor that you could almost always bank on their defense being able to keep them in games long enough for Ant to get hot or Carl to make a few shots or Mike to knock down a couple corner threes or us to get a Nas spurt at the start of the fourth quarter. And I just think that this team doesn't necessarily have anything that's super bankable right now. And I don't think that that's a huge problem. I think that we see teams, especially those that have made major offseason trades, and the Wolves certainly did that. And they had obviously significantly less of an on-ramp to the regular season than what you normally see when you see a big trade like that. So I think certainly it's a delicate balance of giving the team some grace and understanding that Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo are pretty big pieces, and that integrating them without a ton of action in the preseason, a ton of opportunity to practice in training camp, it's just not going to be perfect right away. And I think, you know, Timberwolves fans are so used to seeing the team blow the brakes off of really bad teams last year, and that was a huge reason why the Timberwolves ascended as high as they did in the regular season. But I think that part is what's most concerning to me, that I think the effort and intensity level on the defensive end of the floor, especially with two of the three best defenders on the team and Ant and Jane McDaniels, just hasn't necessarily been there in some of the lower build games, if you will, so far this season. And so I think that's been a little problematic. And I think that this team just expects that they can flip a switch and turn it on at times. And I think that just maybe practicing more of the, we can't rely on flipping a switch is something that I think has concerned me. But again, like, it's all stuff that, we saw the Timberwolves struggle with a little bit 2 years ago, and they were great with it last year. So it's not something that they can't figure out. And we'll probably get into, where the defense is a little bit worse than it was last year, but the offense is significantly better than it was last year too. And I think having more balance is really important, and probably won't make the Wolves quite as matchup dependent in the playoffs, which is really important. And then the other thing that we've seen so far as well in the defense last year struggled with too is really quick guards, or guards that are exceptional in the short mid range area, and we've seen that in the last couple of games with De'Aaron Fox really being able to get past the first line of the defense, and then with Rudy Gobert having to be in a little bit deeper of a drop this season than he was last season, you're seeing guys like Tyus Jones be able to really impact the game as scorers in that floater range once they get downhill into the paint. So I think, again, when you're looking at a team that's roughly top 10 in both offense and defense, that's a team that's going to be good enough for sure to win one playoff series and definitely hang around in a second one at bare minimum. So I think that's probably the lowest end of what the ceiling for this team is. And again, like when you have one of the 5, 6, 7 best players in the NBA and some role players that fit really, really nicely around him, I think that, you know, it's hard to just write that team off as one that can't be in the Western Conference Finals or can't be as good as the team we saw last year. And maybe they won't be as good in terms of wins and losses necessarily. Mm-hmm. Just when you compare where the Timberwolves were one calendar year ago to where they are today. But like, I think fans have to understand that, like, that's okay. You know, like growth is not necessarily linear. And over the course of an 82 game season, like, you're just going to get some weird nights. And right now it's just happening more so on the front end of things. And that might be tougher to deal with. But again, I don't necessarily think that that's, you know, that's something that fans should really be worried about impacting the team's overall ceiling, because at the end of the day, they do still have probably, you know, 7 of the top 125 players or 8 of the top 125 players in the league in the rotation, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah. Leo and I especially talked about this on our last pod, where they're currently on NBA.com. They're 9th in offensive efficiency, 12th in defense, and 11th in net. And so I think we were both kind of like a little bit surprised that those numbers were so good, because I think we're so focused on the team being amazing and doing, and especially like last year in November, they set the wins record for the franchise history in November. And so we all have that on our mind, especially with defense. Which I think we all agree, we'd hope that they'll finish above 12th in defense by the end of the year. But like, to me, like you kind of mentioned this, like these numbers kind of feel like their floor. Like even if they continue to play poorly, I think generally you could probably say they've played poorly or not above their standards so far. It is what it is. But like 12th defensively feels like their floor. Maybe 9th, they could probably finish 10th, 11th in offense if they don't play as well as they hope. But like even on offense, they're clearly still trying to figure things out, trying to figure out what matchups work well, what pairings work well. And so it just feels like if 8-6 and 11th in net rating are what like them figuring it out is, I think Wolves fans should be excited for like what, when they do figure it out, or when they do get more consistent effort against lower teams, where they can go. And I agree, like you said, their wins, they might hit their under on wins. They might go 51 wins, 49 wins or whatever. And they might, instead of being like a top 2 seed, they might be 4th, might be 5th. And I just think that's one of the good things about like going through a playoff run, is they don't need to worry about, okay, like what matchup are we getting this night? What playoff matchup are we trying to hunt? Like, let's just get the play. I mean, you got to get to top 6 because you don't want to be in the play-in tournament. But like, just focus on, like, instead of focusing on every single win every single night, you get to focus on, okay, how are we integrating Randall? How are we integrating Dante? And stuff like that.
Yeah, no question. And I think another thing that's important to keep in mind when you're evaluating the team is, like, I think fans really rallied around the team having a historic defense. Mm-hmm. And I know that you guys have talked about this, but and as fun as it was to watch a team that had a historic defense, I mean, generally you see that teams with, you know, really, really good defenses, but middle of the pack offenses generally don't have awesome playoff outlooks. And generally speaking, the number one offense is going to beat the number one defense in a 7-game series more often than not, especially in today's NBA with how the rules are and how the game's officiated and just how flipping hard it is to stop. You know, we've seen it with Luka and Kyrie. Like, if you play perfect defense, they're still going to make some of these crazy shots. And I think for the Timberwolves, if fans can start to understand, or I guess think about it in a different way, and maybe it's a little bit moving the goalpost, but is how far they're falling in defense going to be more or less of a gap than how much they're jumping up in offense? And right now they're jumping up more in offense than they're losing in defense, just about. I mean, I think too, when you look at their net, I think obviously it's a little worse than where they were last season for sure. But I think, you know, you have to kind of let the numbers play out a little bit more than where they have through 14, 15 games. I'm just saying, over the course of an NBA season, if you end up being, you know, roughly eighth or ninth in offense and roughly the same in defense, which is, I think is probably a fair bet. I don't think this team's going to get a whole lot worse in offense unless their three-point shooting just falls off a cliff. But again, seems a little unlikely considering how many really good three-point shooters they have and the Dante DiVincenzo has been really struggling from three so far. Yeah. I just struggle to see this team not having a ceiling that is equal or higher than what last season's team was. Because the other part of it too is like, what was really tough to square about this team last year is like, if Ant or Carl wasn't having a great night, good luck, yeah. You know? And fortunately for the Timberwolves in the playoffs, like those guys had great nights a lot more often than they didn't. But I think this team is more well equipped to be able to make up for guys maybe not having a great night. And hopefully that'll only be easier for this team to make up, especially in games that are not playing opponents that are quite as strong, as Randall and DiVincenzo continue to get more integrated into things and Jaden McDaniels can tap into more of his offense, I guess a little bit more consistently over the course of the season.
Yeah. My point on this has been like, we need to let go of the past a little bit. And that's Wolves fans, that's media, where it feels like everything that goes right on defense, we're trying to like find whatever they had last year. We're trying to compare into that. And to me, it's like, and everything that goes bad, like the Portland losses, we compare that to the first Gobert year. And like, that's fine. And it's easy to like contextualize things that way. But like, just because thing X goes wrong on X night, that doesn't mean they're going to end up the 8 seed and lose in the first round. And just because like they have a great, if Jaden and Nah have a great defensive possession that mirrors that the one they had against Jamal Murray in the playoffs, that doesn't mean that they're going to be first in defense again. There's real problems with the defense that will almost certainly keep them out of the top three, I would guess. That seems like an unreachable bar, just given their lack of center depth and just whatever else. But I think everything is still there for them, and no one's panicking, at least not since, maybe people are panicking after the second Portland loss. But I agree with you. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Which side of the ball do you think will finish higher at the end of the year? Just whatever net rating or whatever metric we're going to use, because I think Leo was more on the side of the offense would kind of be more top five, and I was more that the defense would be more likely to get into the top five.
Yeah, I think it's honestly, it's tough because I think so much of the defense is dependent upon Rudy Gobert, whereas mm-hmm. I think the offense isn't quite as dependent upon that. And I think, you know, if you told me that Rudy was going to play roughly the same amount of games as he was going to play, or as he played last season, I would say the defense. But if you were going to go the other way and say maybe he's going to play less or guys are going to be hurt, whatever, I would say the offense, just because this team has so many good shooters on it and they've figured out a good way to be able to increase their three-point volume. And I think Anthony Edwards taking that on his shoulders has been really important. And you also added one of the best high-volume shooters in the NBA in Dante DiVincenzo, and Naz Reid's playing more and he shot threes at a higher rate or frequency than Karl Anthony Towns did last season. And so I think all of that is important. And for those reasons, I think it's probably, easier for me to sit here and say offense, just because I think if someone misses time, I think they're more well equipped to pick that up on the offensive end when you consider you've got Rob Dillingham or Joe Ingles, who are both more offensively minded guys, as the more likely to plug in and fill those minutes. So I would probably say the offense, even though I do think that the defense is certainly going to improve if they can find a way to, and who knows, maybe this practice time will be really helpful for them, because mm-hmm. I think that was something that Finchie mentioned, after the Sacramento and the Phoenix game, is just, I don't think that they've really had a whole lot of time to practice with Naz at the five and Randall at the four defensively. And Naz was probably coming into this season preparing to be a three and a four. And that's tough to just be like, all right, hey man, you're actually going to be a five, on the first day of training camp. And, you know, it's a tough spot for Nas, and he certainly showed that he can, you know, be a halfway decent rim protector and rebound the ball pretty well. You know, at times when Karl Anthony Towns was out last year and he was asked to play more of that backup five, I don't think we saw quite as stark of a Rudy on the court versus Rudy off the court during that run. So I think if the Wolves can kind of start to get back to some of that, that'll be important. And as I think Julius Randle kind of starts to understand more of like, hey, this is what Carl did that was really successful, depending on when he was the four next to Rudy, or, you know, he's playing more of the four when Nas was playing the five, because there was some of that last season too. So I think those are all things that I think we'll have to monitor coming up here. But I think if Rudy's healthy, it'll be the defense, but if he slips at all, or misses, you know, 15 games, whatever the case may be, I think it'll probably be the offense.
Yeah. To your point, Finch did talk about after the Phoenix game that they're going to really use this time to figure out what their defense, when he was asked about like the Fox, Sabonis, or Fox and Booker going off on them the past two nights, the first thing he talked about was like their defensive fundamentals were just not there. So he kind of pointed it more to an execution thing than a game plan thing, which I mean, especially with Fox, they were kind of letting him get his points to a certain extent a little bit. But I do think they're going to use this off time to like really, he said, like simplify what they're doing. I'm not sure what complicated things they were doing before, but I'm very interested to see what this Toronto game looks like. Be just like, it's a classic, like they got the huge game against Boston at the end of the week, and in between they got the team with darn near the worst record in the NBA who's missing half the roster, and what kind of effort they're going to get, what the defense looks like. I'm interested to see that. But
I think another part of the defensive thing this week is something that I've noticed has probably been the biggest change for me between Julius and Carl, is that last season, I think Rudy had a very high level of trust in Carl to be able to protect the rim behind him and rebound. I think we've seen Carl rebound at a very, very high rate so far on the defensive end of the floor for the Knicks this season. And, you know, again, it's really easy for Rudy to be more aggressive and be up further in coverage at the level of the ball screen. And when you're defending ball screens with Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert and Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Rudy Gobert, it's much more difficult for ball handlers to get into the lane and make stuff happen. But Rudy's had to play in a deeper drop this season because I don't think he trusts Julius Randle to protect the rim behind him and rebound as much. And I don't think it's something that Julius has been asked to do a whole lot, in his career. So that's something that's going to be interesting to watch, because if you're letting guards just kind of have a runway into the paint, if those, you know, wings and ball handling defenders aren't going to be able to fight over that screen and pick and roll, and a Tyus Jones is going to be able to get in the middle of the lane, or De'Aaron Fox is going to get in the middle of the lane, and someone like Julius Randle, who's guarding a guy in the corner more often than not in those possessions, is ball watching and isn't paying attention to where his guy is, and his guy's cutting behind him, or Julius is just sagging too far in towards the block, towards the paint, and it's just a wide open three. We've seen so much of that from Randle so far. So I think, again, maybe it's some of those fundamentals that Finchie's talking about that they need to get a little bit better with. I think the off-ball defense and fighting over the initial screens have both been areas where the Timberwolves defense has been, you know, rather poor, and they're still 12th in defense, like we've talked about. So, and the other part of it too, you mentioned the you know, particularly weak center depth that they have right now in terms of rim protection. Like the Timberwolves right now, when Gobert is on the floor, they have a defensive rebounding rate of nearly 75%. So three out of every four opponent missed shots, they're rebounding. That would be first in the NBA overall this season. When Rudy Gobert is not on the floor, their defensive rebounding percentage drops to under 67%, which would be third worst in the NBA. So I think it'll be really interesting to see, especially if Detroit continues to play really well and somehow that pick conveys to the Wolves this season, you know, or that projects to convey to the Wolves potentially come February, if they try to, you know, if they try to dangle that or dangle the rights to that pick, sure, and however it'll convey down the line, you know, maybe you go try to get a Rob Williams that we just saw, you know, beat up the Wolves in that first of of two back-to-back games, or try to scour the league for more rim protection help on the second unit, kind of like they did with Monte Morris last year, but for center depth, because I do think that is that particular stat with defensive rebounding is going to be something that they will struggle with.
Yeah, I agree that like the Rudy off minutes and backup center minutes are that's like the big thing, like roster wise, that seems to be missing. Everything else, like the solutions are on the roster, they just got to execute and figure it out. My thing with like trading for a center, like if it's like what it took for them to get Monte, and it's someone that is going to play backup center minutes, play when Rudy's out, and then in the playoffs is largely going to get DMPs, that makes total sense to me. But I just kind of wonder if they trade for like a Rob Williams type who you'd probably like to play 20 minutes a night. Like, I don't know where those minutes are coming from, because those top eight guys, I mean, they'll be injured minutes and whatever during the course of the regular season. But I'm just saying like a fully healthy roster. And it's been my thing with Minot and Dillingham playing, where like, I just don't know. There's not more than 10 minutes if you want to continue to play your top eight guys 25 to 30 minutes a night.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also think, I mean, it'd be pretty unlikely that the Timberwolves don't have an injury of some sort.
For sure.
And I think you probably don't want to play Rudy Gobert 36 minutes a game right now. I think if you can get him closer to 30, just to be able to preserve him, I think that would certainly be better. I think you could probably get away with sitting Julius Randle for another 2 minutes a game. You could probably deal with, you know, sitting Jaden McDaniels for another 2 minutes a game, and he's probably going to get in foul trouble. Like, I just think minutes are going to open up a little bit more easily than some people are saying. I think, again, at full strength, like, that's fine. But again, I think, you know, if you're too deep, you have the ability to adjust your rotation based on matchups. And I think that's something that's, you know, something the Timberwolves should probably lean into a little bit more. Or in certain instances, maybe be willing to start Nikhil Alexander-Walker over Mike Conley. And be able to kind of mess with the rotation that way a little bit. And I just think it's some of those things I'd like to see the Timberwolves lean into a little bit more, and have the coaching staff just get a little bit more creative, so that when the playoffs come and you're so used to having this very rigid rotation with guys coming into the game at the exact same time, going out at the exact same time, not being, you know, malleable based on the matchup and who's playing for the other team. I think that, you know, that can only help them having that flexibility and that agility come playoff time.
Yeah, I guess I'm more focused on the playoffs, I guess, and maybe I shouldn't be. It's mid-November, but like, I agree that there should and will be minutes in the regular season. I just think like trading a big assets for someone that isn't going to play a gigantic role in the playoffs, like that Detroit pick, and maybe that's not a big asset, I guess, but
that would be my response.
That's true. I mean, I kind of think it's going to convey this year. Not because I'm some Detroit Pistons bozo, but like, I just think the Eastern Conference is so bad that they're going to be in the bottom half of the play-in tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Cade's been tremendous. Malik Beasley has been amazing the last week and a half, 2 weeks, and Jaden Ivey's looked a lot better. And, you know, I think if Jalen Duren, Beef Stew, those guys stay healthy, I could see it. The East is terrible this year. It's so just a joke.
Especially if Philly and Milwaukee aren't going to get their crap together. I'm guessing Milwaukee probably will, to a certain extent. But, like, let's see. Yeah, Philly's down 17 in the fourth quarter. Yikes. So, I mean, they're 7-9. I don't know if they can keep a 43-44% win percentage up. But, like, the teams chasing them, other than, like, Milwaukee, are Chicago, Brooklyn, Toronto, Charlotte. Like, who's catching them? I'm not even, like... That was like my one thing when people were all like worried, like all frustrated about the Detroit pick and the protections. And I was like, why will this not convey in the next year or two? If it doesn't convey, what the heck is Detroit doing? Because like, aren't they trying to, I mean, they're not trying to win, but like they've hit the bottom before, like the bottom is in the past for them, right? Like they have the dead cat bounce at least. Like they're going to, in theory, start rising to at least like a play-in tournament type of team, right?
I would think so. And they have a coach that seems like he knows how to use their players that are on their roster right now, which is, you know, and seems to understand that playing spread pick and roll with Cade Cunningham as your point guard generally leads to pretty good things. And that didn't really land with Monty Williams until March last year.
Well, as much as I'd love to keep talking about the Detroit Pistons, we'll head back to the Wolves. I guess bearing the lead here, Julius Randle had his best game of the as a Timberwolf on Sunday, scored 35 points and hit the buzzer beater that won the game. It also hit the buzzer beater at the end of the first half, which if that one doesn't go in, who knows how the clutch time of the game plays out. But like my overall thoughts and really sitting with it the past couple of days is hopefully like this is like a springboard for Randle to like really like he's gotten comfortable with Minnesota. The fan base obviously really supported him that night. He got a fantastic moments with his kids. His younger one does not like loud arenas apparently, and his older one apparently is always there, so that's fun. But do you think like this can be, and he's played well I think overall, especially offensively, and we've touched on the defensive stuff that's caused issues, but do you think this can be like a springboard for him, or is it just a one-off?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it could be a or that it's necessarily one or the other. I just think for me, it drew my attention to what's been an interesting trend so far this season for the Timberwolves and for Randle more specifically, in that, you know, the Timberwolves are 8-1 when Julius Randle takes at least 4 threes. They're 0-5 when he takes 3 or less. And for me, it's not even about how many threes he's making. I just think it's about how many threes he's taking. I think if he can force defenses to play more out at the 3-point line and bite on his pump fake, and he can then get on the drive and attack a spread floor and get that kind of 4-on-3 or 5-on-4 game going, he's a really solid playmaker, and he's going to make the right kick out pass and create a ton of open threes, which is something that Karl Anthony Towns didn't really do a whole lot of. So I think you'd like to see Randle clean up some of his turnovers, but you know, again, you'd hope that would kind of come with some increased continuity, but there's a pretty strong positive correlation with the number of threes that Randle attempts and his assists in a single game, and his turnovers have a negative correlation with the number of threes that he takes. So the more threes he takes, the less he turns it over. So I just think the better the Timberwolves are going to be able to space the floor, the easier it will be for Randle not only to impact things as a shooter necessarily, but to put it on the deck and attack a spread floor and have a little bit of an easier load to be a playmaker. But the other thing that I think it highlighted for me is just like Julius Randle is able to create his own shot more easily than Karl Anthony Towns was. I think what you lose in Carl's ability to you know, be a hyper efficient low post scorer, I think you gain in Randle being able to create his own shot and play make for his teammates a little bit more. So that's certainly important, especially when it comes to late in games and defenses are probably just loading up on Ant, expecting Ant to be the guy. Having another outlet that is easy for Ant to hit and trust, okay, you know, this guy's probably going to be able to create a halfway decent shot for himself or others, is certainly something that lightens the load for him and has to feel good for Ant. So I certainly think for Randle, it's got to feel good for his confidence, no question about it. But you know, I don't think it's anything that's gonna radically change the way that he plays offense for the team. I just think, you know, it's certainly a positive sign that he's capable of being able to produce when the team really needs him to, and when the matchup is a favorable one. And I think the more that he plays with the team, the more they'll kind of understand, okay, when do we want to try to feed Julius and have him abuse this matchup? Because that is something that we see a lot more from him, is that, you know, we saw it early in his tenure with the Wolves, that, you know, he sees a small guy on him, he's just going to play bully ball in the paint and do it without picking up an offensive foul and be able to kind of consistently take advantage of a mismatch. And so that's something that you'd like to see more of. But, again, I think, even if Julius is only shooting like 33-34%, I'd like to see him continue to shoot 3-point shots, just because if you're willing to shoot him, it's going to change the way defenses play you. And if they're out further, playmaking will be easier.
Yeah. To me, like a barometer of the Wolves offense so far has been Randle more than Ant, in the sense of it feels like when Randle is getting those mismatches, scoring on those post-ups, and especially like spraying it out to shooters, that seems to be when the Wolves offense is most effective. And like against Portland, that just like wasn't happening. Or against, I don't think the Heat game, there is much of that either. Like, so that seems to be like a big barometer for me. I know Finch talked about, to your point about the threes, like he just wants Julius to shoot them confidently and shoot them like right away. And it, I don't think they're really concerned about the percentage that goes in. Obviously, in a long-term sense, they are. But like game to game, they're not really concerned about that. And I think your point about Randle getting his own shot is important, because obviously, I don't think anyone, like Towns is a much better offensive player and probably just in a vacuum, a better player, period. But what the Wolves needed, obviously, in that Dallas series was like a second like person that could get their shot by themselves, where Towns was a little bit more, at least with sharing the floor with Gobert especially, was a little bit more necessary about someone getting him to his spots or getting him to a certain point on the floor. But with Randle, if he's got a good matchup, he's able to do it kind of by himself, which helps, especially late in games where they've done a much better job in clutch time situations. What did you think about both Phoenix and Sacramento playing two bigs? I kind of found that weird, and it seemed like Phoenix largely went away from it, but Phoenix started Nurkic and Plumlee, and then Sacramento started Alex Len and Sabonis.
Yeah, I, and just to close the loop on Randle really quick too, another stat that's somewhat interesting is the Wolves are 7-0 when Randle scores at least 22 points, and they're 1-6 when he scores 21 or fewer. So it does speak to, I do think he is a good barometer for what the offense has been, no question. But for Sacramento and Phoenix, I think part of it is them being able to match up with Randle and Gobert. But I think another part of it is they realize that this team has not been a great offense or defensive rebounding team. And, you know, it's just a way for teams to be able to exploit that. And, you know, when you take a look at those two games specifically for Phoenix and for Sacramento, I think the teams had like 23 offensive rebounds between them and scored over 30 second chance points between the two of them. So I think that's certainly part of it. And I think it just speaks to also that, like, you know, the Wolves are also starting three guys that are 6'9" or taller between McDaniels and Randle and Gobert. And I think, if you have the personnel to match up and a team like Sacramento, you're already missing DeRozan, you're already missing Malik Monk, you might as well try to throw a different look at him. And same thing goes for Phoenix too, playing without Durant and Beal. And so, how you structure your rotation is a little bit different too. And so I think it's kind of tough to make any concrete judgments on that in terms of what it means for the Timberwolves, just because both of those teams were down a pair of pretty significant contributors in their top, you know, five, six guys in the rotation. So, but I do think it's interesting that, that we're seeing that now, but we didn't necessarily see much of that last season.
Yeah. And part of it, maybe they don't want to have, especially like you mentioned, like DeRozan probably would have guarded Randle a bunch if he was healthy. Durant would have been the primary matchup. So I think part of it was like they didn't have a good forward to put on them. And so if they would have put Josh Okogie, I don't know, if they would have put that type of player on Randle, it would have been get Randle in the post and have him bully ball. So I think they just kind of went with the large matchup there. It's funny. I don't think if they had Towns in that spot, these teams would not be able to get away with, like, Plumlee or Nurkic was like the classic player type. Towns would just absolutely roast. So it's funny that now it's kind of flipped now, where if teams are going to play small, which is what they would do against Carl, now that's flipped. That's the poor matchup for Randle, and the potentially bigger players, the primary matchup.
And Nurkic got played off the floor anyways, so.
Yeah, I don't know what Phoenix is going to do with that. They've obviously had a nice start to the season, and their recent stretch has a lot to do with who is on the floor for them. But we talk about the Wolves' backup center minutes being a problem, but I think, like, we get lost in the, like, our own team's problems and don't, like, look at, and obviously they have Booker and Durant, they have plenty of talent, but, like, the Phoenix might have a starting center problem, although the Iguodaro guy that was out there looked pretty good. But it's interesting to think about the other problems other teams have instead of focusing on our own. What do you think about the clutch time offense that the Wolves have been able to run, or just the clutch time altogether? Because that was like such a huge problem for them last year, at least in the playoffs, where down the stretch of games they were not able to close games. The offense would kind of go into the toilet. And how much do you think they're going to continue to be? I mean, they've obviously had the Miami game was a dumpster fire, but do you think that the clutch time stuff is going to continue?
Yeah, I would certainly hope that it would continue. I just think that Anthony Edwards has seen so many different types of defenses and has played with someone like Mike Conley, who has kind of helped him identify what those defenses are. You know, he's learned the give it to Mike and get it right back when you're facing a double or a hard hedge or a switch or whatever the case may be, as ways to try to combat a defense loading up on you. I think that is all certainly part of the equation. And I think you're starting to see teams worry about Ant's 3-point shooting a little bit more. And you see in the clutch that he does such a great job of mixing up where he's scoring from. I think we've seen him score at all three levels and get to the free throw line, which is super important. And I think, you know, when teams are loading up on a specific player or have a heightened sense of awareness of, okay, where's Anthony Edwards? I think if you move the ball really well, or you have, you know, good pace and kind of kinetic energy in your half court offense, it's just easier for the ball to find the open man. And there's going to be more open men for the ball to find in those situations as well. So I think that's where the continuity, I think, is really starting to make an impact for the Timberwolves. And you're also starting to match that kind of with where Anthony Edwards is on his kind of clutch character development arc, and that he's seen so many different defenses now that he kind of has at least seen on film, okay, I've used this against this type of defense and this has worked, or he has, you know, a better understanding of all these different guys in the league and who they are as defenders and how they might defend him. So I think that that's all certainly part of it. And then again, you factor in that you have another guy like Randall who is capable of scoring in isolation, which is no doubt really important. Jaden McDaniels, we've seen, is capable of scoring in isolation. And then you've also seen, you know, someone like Rudy Gobert, who, when you're worried about Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle and Naz Reid and Mike Conley and everyone else who's on the floor, oh, I'll just get this little tap in offensive rebound, or I'll tap this ball out to create another opportunity for us. I think it's just the sense of all the different pieces kind of fitting together and being able to impact the game at the right time. But for me, it's all downstream of defenses having to pay so much attention to Ant that it opens the door up for other players. And then when Ant does get his one-on-one matchups, he's done a phenomenal job of being aggressive and mixing up where he's trying to score from, because it's just put defenses in so much of a bind so far this season. So, I mean, it's not even like their defense has been that great. It's that they're, you know, their defensive rating in the clutch this year is 120, which is 17th in the league. But it's just that their offense is 131.6, which is fourth in the league. So I think, again, if you can maintain the same level of offense, which I'm a little bit more confident in, it's just about, all right, how can we defend a little bit more cohesively, and how can we make sure that we're not allowing offensive rebounds in the clutch as well? Because the Timberwolves have a defensive rebounding rate of under 53% in the clutch, which is fifth worst in the league. So I think if they can find a way to rebound a little bit better in the clutch, you should see those those numbers get even better.
Right. And anytime we're talking about clutch, it's like such a small sample size that, like, especially we're talking about a couple minutes of what, 14 games. So I mean, the rebounding's obviously been an issue, and we saw that against Phoenix, where they had three chances to get that last rebound and needed a shot clock violation to get them the ball back eventually. But yeah, I think the biggest story to me in the clutch is Ant. And obviously we talked about Julius Randle being a good partner. We talked about Julius Randle being a good partner for Ant, but like the biggest thing to me is that Ant is getting to good shots in the clutch, because I think in the past he's kind of settled for shots, or he's not gotten like the best shots. And especially like this year, when his 3-point volume has gone through the roof, I think the natural worry was like, okay, well, is he going to settle for just step back threes when he needs to? Like, I think we all agree, like, especially the way he's shooting it, like, 3-point volume is awesome, but like, he's also one of the best rim scorers in the league, and we don't want like that to go away. And that's been the biggest thing in the clutch to me, is that he's gotten to good shots. Obviously the dagger against Sacramento is a tough shot that maybe won't go in all the time, but in the Phoenix game, the bucket that put him ahead was near the basket. Like, he's gotten to more of a mid-range shots when they've just needed 2 points. So with everything with this team, like, they're going to go as far as Anthony Edwards is going to be able to take them. And obviously the supporting cast is important, but if he's going to be like this in the clutch, they're going to be able to win a lot of games. And if this is a, hopefully not like a mirage or whatever, or just a momentary blip, then they're going to struggle like they did last year. Yeah. On to the Wolves' last two games remaining this week. They got at Toronto, like we talked about, against just a brutally injured Toronto team. And then the big one, at Boston, who just ended the Cavs' 15-0 start to the season. So much for that. Oh, that was a pretty fun game, but Boston looks to be every sort of, even without Porzingis to start the season, they look to be every bit the championship contender they were last year. Which game, I'm almost more interested in the Toronto game. Maybe I'm too focused on like the lack of energy in some of these lesser matchups, but I'm interested to see what they come out looking like against Toronto, because the Portland game and even the start of the Phoenix game, where Phoenix doesn't have Ant's childhood idol Durant out there, what kind of energy they put out there in Toronto.
Yeah, I think for me it'll be interesting too, because I don't think RJ Barrett played when these two teams first met. I don't think Scottie Barnes did Scottie play in that first matchup? I think it was right before Scottie got hurt, but I think Scottie could be the game that Scottie Barnes returns for. I'm pretty sure he's listed as questionable, so we could see that. So I think, you know, in terms of the way that RJ Barrett's kind of been the engine for them offensively, certainly that changes things for the Raptors. But I certainly am more interested in the Boston game, because I think it'll just be such a better test, in my opinion, of where their compete level is defensively, and sure, and how much that sort of, I guess, mini camp week that they've had here with 4 days off will be able to kind of show itself. And I think when you look at, okay, you have kind of Nikhil, Dante, Mike, Ant, Jaden against Derek White, Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Peyton Pritchard. Like, that's kind of an interesting 5-on-5. And then in the front court, you've got, you've got Gobert and you've got Horford. I don't think Porzingis is going to play. It sounds like he's still ramping up and might still be, you know, a little bit more than a week away from playing. So I think, you know, again, if Julius Randle is able to take advantage of being able to go against Jason Tatum, I think there'll be a real opportunity for him there. But again, I just think it's a decent matchup for the Timberwolves. And we saw that in the games that they played against Boston last season. And I think, you know, if you want to talk about a springboard, I think that's a really interesting game that it could jumpstart things for them. Okay, you know, we proved we can get past a game that we probably should win against Toronto after squeaking out two other games that you probably should win. Okay, that's a nice little confidence boost. But okay, if you can then go to Boston and do what you did last season, well, they didn't win in Boston, but against the Celtics, if you can do what you did last season and kind of prove to yourself early in the season, like, all right, you know, this is the best team in the league and we just beat them, and our best player just went toe to toe with their best players and took them on and took them down, I think that would do a lot for this team's confidence and cohesion going forward. So I think just in terms of what it can do for the team, I think that Boston game is certainly more interesting to me. But I think that point becomes almost a moot one or falls flat if they do lay an egg against Toronto, mm-hmm, and struggle against them. And I think that, again, Toronto is a team where, yes, they are injured, but it's a talented enough group where the Wolves don't show up. Like, they've got some offensive firepower to be able to score some points and do so, somewhat quickly. So it'll be fun to see, I guess, what that week of time off and prep will do for him.
Yeah, and they do have even more. There's an extra off day. There's two full off days between Toronto and Boston. So it's not only do they get all this time off before the Toronto game, they even have an extra day off before the Boston game. So it'll be interesting. I don't know. Mike and Dante are questionable. If there's any doubt for them, I'm guessing they'd hold them out of the Toronto game to kind of have them be healthy for the Boston game. Although we've seen sitting Mike might have cost them that second Portland game. Who knows? But
I don't think it's fair to say that Mike Conley sitting was the reason why. No. You know, like it shouldn't have come down to that.
For sure. Just more that, like, I think people were like, let's get new energy in here. And they did that, and they still laid the same exact egg they did the night before. But yeah, I'm interested to see, like, who matches up with who on is Randall going to get the Tatum matchup, or is he going to, like, there isn't a great place to put Randall, assuming Gobert will go on Horford. But on the flip side, they don't have a great matchup for Randall, at least when I think, like, the big thing and the whole thing with Boston seems like they just need, like, just anything from Porzingis, like, not in the regular season, but like getting, like, when they get to the finals against whoever, like Cleveland or in the NBA finals, that they get back there. Because if they had Porzingis, I think that just, like, they would put Porzingis on Gobert, and they'd probably have Horford play a lot and match up against Randall.
I was just going to say, I think that's the logical thing for me. And again, it would depend on, you know, do you have Derek White out there? Do you have Horford out there? Do you trust Tatum to take him?
Yeah, and that's the scary thing with Boston is, I mean, the Wolves are kind of hoping to get to this point too, where they just have waves of fantastic all-star caliber players that it's just like, oh, they have Drew Holiday isn't playing well, they'll throw Derek White at you. When they have Porzingis, if he's not doing whatever, they'll throw Horford at you. Like, they just have so they need a shot at the end of the buzzer. They throw Pritchard in there. Like, they're just, it'll be a fun game just watching the Wolves try to match up with that. We were hoping that it would, the Wolves Celtics would be a finals matchup last year, and we didn't get it, but it was their springboard last year, the first big win. They beat Denver the few nights before, but like the Wolves really started to go on that winning streak after that first Boston game.
Yeah. But I think that Boston game was a little bit more eye-opening in that there were higher expectations for the Celtics, as crazy as that sounds, for the Nuggets coming off of coming off of winning a title. But again, like, the Wolves had played Denver. I think being in the same division, playing them in the playoffs, like, that obviously is something that's interesting and important too. But I think too, the other thing that will be interesting to see maybe, like, what the Wolves are able to learn from is, like, the Celtics are basically playing a 9-man rotation, and they've been playing 9 guys pretty consistently. And it's like their top 6 guys, top 7 guys are just as important, as impactful as the Timberwolves. And I think you're just seeing that, like, nobody's playing more than 37 minutes a game for them right now. And I think the Wolves maybe not being able to play as efficiently with their starting five, leading to closer games, situations where you're putting more pressure on your bench, and Finch maybe doesn't want to go to guys that are further down the roster that he doesn't trust quite as much, I think is probably a key difference between the Wolves and the Celtics. But it's just like another thing for people saying, like, oh, well, who are the minutes going to? How are you going to get it? And it's on one level, or on a kind of a different way of saying it, is like, if you don't start trying to expand the rotation now, how are you going to do it, you know, in February and March? And I know that's where you start to have, oh, well, injuries will happen and so and so. But again, like, more planning that you can do and being prepared for when that those injuries come or when those shoes drop, I do think is important. And if the Celtics can do it, I think the Timberwolves can do it, because that would be the one comp in terms of how deep the Timberwolves are.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, what the Celtics are doing, or what the Timberwolves want to do, obviously the title is obviously what everyone's looking for, but like, just, I mean, they're 15 games into the season, they're in cruise control. Like you said, they're not overplaying their guys. I'd be just absolutely shocked if they weren't a top 2 seed, which is all they really, if they give up game 7 to Cleveland in an East Finals, they're going to prioritize, like, figuring out their matchups and rotations over trying to fight for that one seed. And they're, I mean, that's kind of the cruise control level that I think Wolves fans would like to get to, is like a year in, year out contender where you're not worried about losing in Portland because you didn't play this way or that way. You can get Dillingham minutes without trying to win every night. And unfortunately, I just think like in the extreme short term, they are in that point where they need to play their top eight guys a little bit more. And ideally, they kind of get like the cohesion right where they can just, they, like you said, they can lower some of these guys' minutes in order to get Minot and Dillingham minutes. Because while I don't think either of those guys are going to be like a playoff rotation piece, they're going to, like, the money of it all is going to require them to get these guys ready at some point, especially Dillingham, when, whether it's next year or the year after, like, Mike Conley won't be here, or won't be an effective player anymore.
And that's why I think, like, I agree with Minot not being a playoff, but I absolutely think that you could put Rob Dillingham in the game and just say, go cook offensively. Yeah. For 5 or 6 minutes. And that's unquestionably a switch that you're going to want to be able to flip come the playoffs. And it's a card you want to be able to play. And I think if you're not willing to play that card in a regular season game against like the Raptors or the Hornets or something like that, like, come on. At some level, like, I understand that we want to prioritize winning games in the interim, but I also am very interested in raising the ceiling come April and May. And I think fans may be concerned, oh, well, if we're not a top two seed, then we just have no chance. Like, I think we've seen that if you can play defense the level the Timberwolves have been able to prove that they can play defense at, I know obviously different team, but most of the same pieces are there. Like, I think they're capable of winning a road game and flipping the series.
Yeah. I mean, just look at the Denver series, how important home court advantage is. The road team won the first four games of that series. And how much did home court advantage help Denver when they were choking away a 20-point lead and Naz Reid and Karl Anthony Towns were dunking all over their face? So, I mean, you got to get out of the play-in tournament, obviously, and not because, like if the season ended today, they'd play the Clippers in that first play-in tournament game. Like, that wouldn't necessarily worry them. They're much better than the Clippers, but it's like that. I think the week off is like so important. You get like the play-in tournament week off is really nice for these guys, and you don't have to fight and claw in the play-in tournament. But it'll be an interesting, like, what balance they try to strike between winning games in the short term and getting young guys minutes / like just planning for the future. But unfortunately right now, I think they've obviously leaned too much into the starters, but like they do need to start stacking up wins before they can really start to look for the future. But I agree that with most people that it's been a bit too much starter heavy and top eight rotation guy heavy so far.
Yeah, no question. And I think too, like you look at the Timberwolves schedule and I think, you know, some people will say, okay, Boston, Houston, Sacramento, LA, Golden State, New York, Golden State, like really the next month is all playoff teams for the most part. And you don't really get an easier portion of your schedule until you get to the new year. And I think then once you get to the new year, you kind of get some more interspersed stuff. And then it really lightens up, you know, in February and March for the most part. So again, like it's going to be trial by fire a little bit. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, playing Toronto and San Antonio and Charlotte and Chicago and Portland, you know, three times that you weren't able to tap into it then.
Yeah.
Just because that was the opportunity for it. But again, like on some level, it's like, hey, if the starters played better, maybe Finch would feel better about, you know, trusting some of those other guys to play. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach that, because I don't necessarily think it's super tenable to play, you know, 7-8 guys for 20 plus minutes a game, especially when, you know, it's been hard to bank on two of Naz, Dante, and Nikhil really giving you an offensive punch every single night. So we'll see. But I do think that they will need to manufacture more scoring off the bench, and maybe that has to come from Rob Dillingham.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Luka Garza.
Hey, I mean, I'm all for playing Luka Garza if the opponent has a small ball five as their backup five. Sure. Like, I think Luka Garza is like going to absolutely destroy those matchups. I think he's unquestionably going to score. Like, if you played him 15 minutes against, you know, like Denver, who doesn't really have a backup five, like I think he could probably score 12, 14 points in those 15 minutes and probably grab you three offensive rebounds. Like I legitimately think that they should lean into that more in those types of matchups. And again, it goes back to like, I think you need to be willing to adjust your rotation a little bit depending on who you're playing. But, you know, I just don't think that we see that type of flexibility from coaches as often as we'd all like to during the regular season.
Yeah. My favorite stat from last year was something like Luka Garza was either fourth or fifth in points per minute scored in the whole NBA. And like the guys sitting around him were like Luka Doncic, Giannis, and Shea. And then it was just like Luka Garza and his whatever 6 minutes a night when he gets in there. So I think we'd all be interested to see how that would translate. But like you said, if it's not going to be against if they played the Spurs, Wembanyama is not the matchup, obviously. But yeah, it's been a little bit disappointing that they haven't been able to rack up wins. But I also kind of look at New Orleans at 4-12. Dallas is a half game behind them. And then obviously like Milwaukee and Philly have been just, it's like, it could be worse. It could be a whole, like, there's another level of struggling to win games that the Wolves have not come close to, thank goodness. But we'll close out with a stat. Alan Horton tweeted out, the Wolves have lost 19 games in a row in Toronto with a win down in Tampa in the middle of that. And they've lost 17 in a row in Boston. So that's dating back to 2004 in Toronto and 2005 in Boston. So Jack went to college out in Boston and never saw the Wolves win out there. And three other people went out in college.
I never saw them play in Boston because they were always in Boston over winter break, unfortunately. Really? But yeah, just as a follow up to that stat, this is from Automatic NBA, who's a very good follow on Twitter for people who are interested in just stats and keeping in touch with things around the league, that every single NBA team in the last 20 years has won at least one game in every other city, except the Timberwolves in Toronto and the Timberwolves in Boston, which is kind of crazy.
Well, I mean, obviously, if they lose in Boston in a hard-fought game, you shrug your shoulders and that's how it goes. If this Toronto losing streak hits 20, let's just, please. I would like to enjoy the Boston game without being frustrated about how the Toronto game went. So let's hope for a win there.
I hear you.
Awesome. Well, Jack, you got anything else you want to plug or say Wolves wise?
No, I just hope they beat the Raptors and we don't have to keep pressing the proverbial panic button over and over again.
Yeah. Well, if they do, Jack and I will be here in our respective platforms to either hit the panic button or prevent you guys from doing so. Well, yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. And Leo and I will be back with you guys early next week.